Think about the last time you did your pre-flight. You walked around the airplane, pulled the pitot tube cover off, gave it a look, and moved on. Maybe took 5 seconds, maybe less. Here's the thing. That little aluminum tube sticking out from the leading edge of the wing is the beginning of a chain that feeds your airspeed indicator, your altimeter, and your vertical speed indicator. 3 of the 6 basic flight instruments. And if something goes wrong with that chain, you might not know it until the numbers stop making sense at exactly the wrong moment. I'm Pattern, this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hanger, and today we're getting into the pitot static system. Not the textbook version where everything works perfectly. The real version, where a mud dauber wasp builds a nest in your pitot tube over the weekend, and your airspeed indicator starts lying to you on climbout. Before we get into it, a quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every milestone in your aviation journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, commercial certificate. They have a coin for all of it. Great way to mark the moments that actually mean something. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. All right, let's walk through this together. The pitot static system is 2 separate systems that share some of the same plumbing. You have the pitot system, which measures RAM air pressure. That's the air pressure created by the airplane moving forward through the air. And you have the static system, which measures ambient air pressure, the pressure of the still air around you at whatever altitude you're flying. Your airspeed indicator uses both. It compares RAM air pressure from the pitot tube to static pressure from the static ports. The difference between those two pressures is what drives the airspeed needle. Your altimeter uses only static pressure. As you climb, static pressure drops, and the altimeter translates that pressure change into an altitude reading. Your vertical speed indicator also uses only static pressure. It measures the rate at which static pressure is changing, which tells you whether you're climbing, descending, or holding level. 3 instruments. 2 pressure sources. And here's what trips students up. When one of those sources gets blocked or restricted, the instruments don't just stop working. They start doing things that look almost normal. That's the dangerous part. A dead instrument is obvious. An instrument that gives you plausible but wrong information is the one that gets you into trouble. Let me give you the classic scenario. You flew into a wet airfield yesterday and left the airplane tied down overnight. The static ports, which are usually just small holes flush with the fuselage, picked up some moisture, or a small insect decided one of them looked like a good home. You do your pre-flight. You check the pitot tube, it looks fine. You don't check the static ports the same way because they're tiny flush holes and there's not much to look at. You fly normally for the first part of the flight. Then something starts bothering you, your altimeter seems off. Your vertical speed indicator is sluggish. Your airspeed feels like it doesn't quite match what the airplane is telling you through the seat of your pants. What's happening is that the static system has a restricted source. The pressure the system is sampling is no longer the real outside pressure. It's whatever pressure was trapped in the system when the blockage formed. If your static ports are blocked, your altimeter will freeze. It'll read whatever altitude it was at when the blockage occurred, no matter how high or low you actually go. Your vertical speed indicator will read 0, and your airspeed indicator will read incorrectly because it's comparing real pitot RAM pressure to a frozen static reference. Here's where it gets practically important. If you're at altitude and you descend with a blocked static system, the real atmospheric pressure is rising around you, but your static system doesn't know that. Your airspeed indicator will actually read higher than your true airspeed because the pitot pressure is rising with your descent while the static side stays frozen. You might think you're going faster than you are. That matters a lot on final approach, where your energy state is everything. If you climb after a static blockage, the airspeed indicator reads lower than actual. You might be flying faster than indicated, which matters for maneuvering speed and structural load limits. Now let me talk about the pitot tube blockage, because that's a different failure mode with its own surprises. If the pitot tube is blocked and the drain hole is also blocked, your airspeed indicator freezes. Whatever it read when the blockage occurred is what it will show. No RAM air getting in, nothing moving. But here's the failure mode that surprises people. If the pitot tube is blocked and the drain hole stays open, the airspeed indicator doesn't freeze. It becomes something more like an altimeter. Think about that for a second. With the drain hole open and the pitot tube blocked, the pitot chamber is sealed from new RAM air but still connected to ambient pressure through the drain. The airspeed indicator is now effectively comparing static pressure to static pressure. On the ground, it reads 0. As you climb, static pressure drops, and the airspeed indicator sees that as a reduction in what it thinks is pitot pressure, and the needle starts climbing. If you're climbing out and your airspeed indicator is showing an increasing reading that doesn't match the sound of the engine, the feel of the controls, or the attitude of the aircraft, a blocked pitot with an open drain is one possible cause. The instrument is responding to altitude change, not actual speed. This failure mode contributed to one of the most sobering accidents in recent aviation memory. Air France 447 in 2009 lost reliable airspeed data when pitot tubes iced over during cruise across the Atlantic. That was a transport category aircraft with far more instrumentation and cross-check capability than most of us will ever fly. But the lesson about what happens when pilots encounter airspeed data that stops making sense applies to every cockpit at every altitude. When the instruments disagree, you have to know which one to trust. And you have to make that call quickly. Let's talk about your alternates. If you suspect a pitot or static failure, most general aviation aircraft have an alternate static source. It's usually a valve or knob in the cockpit, often near the instrument panel, that opens the static system to the cockpit interior instead of the outside static ports. Cockpit pressure in flight is slightly lower than true ambient outside pressure. The cockpit isn't perfectly sealed, and there's a slight pressure differential that develops. That means when you switch to alternate static, your altimeter will read slightly high, your airspeed indicator will read slightly high, and your vertical speed indicator will momentarily show a brief climb before settling. Your aircraft's pilot operating handbook will give you the specific corrections. Some airplanes list a correction like add 6 knots to indicated airspeed when using alternate static. That's a measured, flight-tested correction for that specific airframe. Know where that table is in your POH before you need it? If your aircraft doesn't have an alternate static source, the technique that's still documented in the pilot's handbook of aeronautical knowledge is to break the glass face on the vertical speed indicator. The VSI is a sealed instrument, so opening it creates a reference to cockpit interior pressure, which then becomes the static reference for the altimeter and airspeed indicator. You sacrifice the VSI. But you get a workable static reference for the other two instruments. That is genuinely a last resort. If you're in a school aircraft, you're not going to do that. But knowing it exists, knowing why it works, is part of understanding the system. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. When you're doing your pre-flight, don't just glance at the pitot tube, look inside it, or use a small flashlight if you have one. You're looking for obstructions, insects, mud daubers, moisture debris from sitting outside. Wasps and mud daubers can build a substantial plug just inside the tube opening overnight in warm weather. The outside of the tube looks perfectly clear, and the inside is completely sealed. And don't forget the cover. If your airplane has a pitot tube cover, make sure it comes off before you fly. This sounds obvious. It is not always obvious at 6 in the morning before coffee, before the pre-flight brief, before your student starts asking questions. There's a phrase that appears in accident reports with uncomfortable regularity. Pitot cover not removed. That streamer on the cover exists because the tube looks almost the same with the cover on as without it. If the remove before flight streamer on your training airplane is faded, frayed, or too small to catch the eye in early morning light, mention it to your flight school. That's a safety item worth maintaining. On the static ports, you're looking for anything that could block a very small hole. Tape left over from recent maintenance, debris, mud from a grass strip, ice or frost in winter conditions. Static ports on many training aircraft are located on the fuselage aft of the wing, which means they can be missed on a quick walk around if you're not specifically looking for them. Let's get into what the Airman Certification Standards say about this, because the ACS requires private pilot candidates to demonstrate knowledge of the pitot static system, including which instruments are affected by pitot failure and which are affected by static failure. The examiner may ask verbally or they may set up a scenario. Either way, you need to know which instruments use pitot pressure, which use static pressure, and which use both. Let's run through it clean. Pitot pressure only, nothing uses pitot alone. The pitot tube feeds the pitot chamber of the airspeed indicator, but the airspeed indicator needs the static side to complete the pressure comparison. So pitot alone isn't enough for any instrument. Static pressure only, your altimeter and your vertical speed indicator. Both pitot and static, your airspeed indicator. Now let's run the failure modes. Blocked pitot, drain hole closed. Airspeed indicator freezes at whatever it read when blocked. Altimeter and vertical speed indicator continue working normally because static is fine. Blocked pitot, drain hole open. Airspeed indicator reads like an altimeter, increasing as you climb and decreasing as you descend. Altimeter and VSI still work normally. Blocked static ports. Pitot fine. Airspeed reads incorrectly based on a frozen static reference, reading high in a descent and low in a climb. Altimeter freezes at whatever it read when the blockage occurred. Vertical speed indicator freezes at zero. Both systems blocked. Airspeed freezes. Altimeter freezes. VSI freezes. Walk through that a few times in your head. If you understand why each instrument behaves the way it does, you don't need to memorize a table. You just think through what pressure is available and what the instrument does with it. Now let me give you a practical scenario. Because knowing the theory is one thing and recognizing the problem at 3,000 feet while you're also navigating and talking on the radio is another. You're on a VFR cross country. About 40 minutes into the flight, you notice your altimeter hasn't changed in several minutes even though you've been gently climbing to clear a ridge. Your vertical speed indicator is sitting at zero. Your airspeed looks a few knots high for your power setting. Classic, blocked static. What do you do? First, don't panic. This is a manageable situation in visual conditions. Second, verify with other cues. Your GPS ground speed gives you a cross-check. If GPS shows 90 knots over the ground and the winds are light, but your airspeed indicator says 110, something isn't right. Third, use your alternate static source if you have one. Know before you fly whether your aircraft has one and where it is. Fourth, use visual references to maintain terrain separation and use GPS altitude as a rough sanity check. GPS altitude is not as accurate as a calibrated altimeter, but in a known blockage situation, it gives you a working approximation. Fifth, talk to somebody. If you're on flight following, tell approach or center that your altimeter is giving you an abnormal indication. They can read your altitude from radar returns. That's a useful and underused tool. They're tracking you on radar, and they can say radar contact shows you at 4,600, while your altimeter insists you're at 3,200. That information matters. Finally, land at the nearest suitable airport. Don't press on. A static blockage that started as a curiosity in clear skies becomes genuinely dangerous if you continue into areas where you need accurate altitude information. Let me spend a moment on pitot heat because it belongs in this conversation. Most general aviation aircraft have a pitot heat switch. When it's on, an electric heating element inside the pitot tube prevents ice from forming and accumulating. The regulations require pitot heat when flying in visible moisture below certain temperature conditions. But the practical habit is to check that it works before you need it. Turn pitot heat on during your run-up or engine run checks. In about 30 seconds, the tube should be noticeably warm to the touch. Some aircraft have a pitot heat annunciator light. If yours doesn't, the ammeter or load meter is your indicator. Pitot heat draws electrical current. When you switch it on, you should see the electrical load change slightly. If you turn on pitot heat and there's no change at all in your electrical readings, that's a sign the element may be failed or the circuit has an issue. Worth knowing on the ground rather than discovering when you need it, you don't need to be in visible clouds to lose a pitot tube to ice. Freezing rain below an overcast can coat a cold pitot tube quickly. Wet snow at the right temperature, any precipitation that deposits moisture on metal that's below freezing, the airplane doesn't have to look like it's flying in a cloud for the pitot tube to have a problem. So let's bring it back to that 5-second pre-flight check. Take a little more time than that. Look inside the pitot tube, make sure the cover is off and the streamer is visible. Check the static ports on your walk-around specifically and deliberately. Know where your alternate static source is and what corrections to apply when you use it. Check your pitot heat and verify its drawing power. Know the failure modes well enough that if an instrument starts behaving strangely in flight, you can reason through what's happening instead of staring at it and hoping it fixes itself. The pitot static system is elegant in its simplicity. Two sources of pressure feeding three instruments. But the failure modes are subtle. They can mimic normal operation for long enough to become serious, and they happen in conditions that are already demanding. The pilot who catches a blocked pitot tube on pre-flight had a good day. The pilot who catches a suspicious instrument disagreement at altitude, reasons it through, uses the tools available, and gets down safely had a great day. The knowledge is what gives you either outcome. The FAA's Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge and your aircraft's specific pilot operating handbook are the places to go for this. The POH, especially for the alternate static corrections that are specific to your airplane. Find us at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Check your pitot tube out there. Stay sharp.